Welcome to the Augusta Golf Show podcast. Now, here's John Patrick.
Peter Kessler is a noted golf historian, award-winning journalist, and broadcaster. Catch up with him after the big events of the year. Always a pleasure to welcome my friend Peter Kessler back to the Augusta Golf Show. How are you, Peter?
I am well, and I am delighted to be with you, as I am after every major championship and the times that we get together personally. Thanks for including me today.
My pleasure. Do you watch, like, all of the coverage?
You know, this time I did. I don't always, and in recent years I've tended to wait until it appeared to be watchable from the scores online. But this year on the Friday, I just thought that that day in particular, where they had the full day of golf and the extra holes to play, mm-hmm. was as well produced for the first time in ages that they actually just, now I was watching Masters.com, but they just showed the players and the shots. No talking heads. You had no idea who might have been speaking. No interviews. No crazy stuff out by a 16th green where people are going crazy. So from that point of view, I just thought it was fantastic. And it compelled me to watch the entire day's coverage from when it went on in the morning until it went off just before dark here. The other thing that that was super impressive to me about having chosen to watch every shot on the Friday, mm-hmm. was I wanted to check out a couple of things about Tiger. The one that's obvious is what did his health look like, but the other one was, and much more important to me at this stage, can he still hit the same shots he used to be able to hit in his palmiest days so that when he recovers from where he is now to get ready for the senior tour in 22 months, where he'll play every week with a cart and win. I saw two shots that blew me away. The 3-wood into 15. I mean, for people who don't know the 15th green, it's like your driveway, small driveway sideways, and alligators and sharks on both sides with sloping terrain into water. It's an impossible shot with a wedge for a recreational player. 1 out of 20, a 10 handicapper can hit that green from 100 yards, literally. So a full-blooded 3-wood, temperature was cool, he hit it pin high. That was Tiger-esque. Mm-hmm. But when he followed it up on 16 with the pin back right, where virtually no one went at it because it's smaller than your bathtub, he flew an iron right in there. It's the tightest possible squeeze you could possibly have, particularly given the ferocity of the wind, which, of course, made it such a fantastic tournament, like an Open Championship. The wind, the weather was the big factor this year. It was just so fantastic. So the playing conditions, watching Tiger, seeing if he still had the shots he's going to need 22 months from now, the quality of the Masters.com coverage, the difficulty of the golf course, the fairness of the golf course, and I never saw a pin that I thought was unfair.
You know, I thought Friday, speaking of Tiger, and we'll get on to Scotty here in a second, and I know what he did over the weekend, but I thought that 48-year-old guy in those conditions on Friday showed everybody else what you do. I mean, if there is a definition of grinding it out, that's what he did that Friday. And I almost felt like that was one of his better performances in years, just shooting even par in those conditions.
I couldn't agree with you more. The last time we saw Tiger play like that really was 2019 when he won the Masters.
Yeah.
You know, what has he played, 26 holes this year on tour at the Genesis when he had to drop out because he couldn't walk? I mean, he's the only player who doesn't need reps. Jones didn't need reps in between tournaments. Nicklaus didn't need reps. Hogan certainly didn't need them. Tiger doesn't need them. No, everybody else needs them, proven by how the LIV guys did over this past week at the Masters tournament. But I thought it was one of the great, great, great grind-out 72s ever, and proved so much to us much more so than the couple of things that I happen to mention, the one that you're mentioning now. That 72 on that day, what it says about him physically, mentally, confidence, things that are a given, that his swing is working. Yeah, magnificent call, John. Thank you.
We are talking with Peter Kessler here on the Augusta Golf Show. We talked about this after the Players. You've been singing the praises of Scottie Scheffler for years. How many Masters might this young man win?
Well, let's be fair here. Okay. It's you who touted him first. Because in 2022, when he won the Masters, he had gone into that season never winning on the PGA Tour before. So he wins three times before the Masters. Then he wins the Masters. Then you ask me on radio if anybody's going to remember this in 50 years. And I knew you weren't being flip. And I knew that meant that you had been watching his short but meteoric rise over the few months preceding the Masters. And the way I interpreted the question then and the way I interpreted your question now, we remember this in 50 years, was, is he going to be a once-in-a-generational talent? And did I, John Patrick, happen to spot that sooner than pretty much anybody on the planet? To which I would say, yes. And I remember saying to you at the time that, no, it won't be remembered in 50 minutes, let alone 50 years, unless he starts to do the things that you add to the record so that you give people a reason to remember you long after your palmiest days are over. So you spotted it really early. It was an incredibly brilliant question. And the answer, of course, is you were right on the money, because now what does he have, 10 wins and 2 Players and 2 Masters? He's won 3 of his last 4 weeks. His putting is fine. If you're the best ball hitter, you only need to finish in the top 30 in putting to win the golf tournament. You don't need to putt better than everybody else. It's just a complete myth. When Tiger won his 82 tournaments, his average putting for the week was 27th in the field. 27th in the field and hit all the greens and the fairways or more than anybody else. That is a winning combination every single week of the year.
You know,
30 in putting, number one in ball striking. And Scottie Scheffler, I love his swing because it's a little crazy and certainly not a classical-looking thing. But you nailed it. You called him. He's the best player in the world right now. And I think he has the perfect internal disposition to handle all of this without a problem.
Well, expand on that a little bit. I mean, he's very level-headed. Keeps saying that golf is not the most important thing in his life. Does that kind of mentality really help him when he gets under pressure?
Yeah, because he reminds me of Byron Nelson. Now, Byron Nelson was born in 1912. He won 51 times on tour. He won 3 majors. To him, the American majors were what was important, and so that's what he went after, even though he did play in the Open Championship but didn't fare well. But Byron Nelson was the best player, you know, from really 1937 through 1946. Now, of course, that was interrupted by World War II, and a lot of the guys weren't around. So they didn't hold a lot of the tournaments after the 42 Masters. They canceled it. And, of course, he won the 42 Masters, Byron Nelson, in a playoff over Ben Hogan. But Byron Nelson was like the most boring personality you could ever want to be around. I mean, you take a long drive with him in the car and you're the driver, you could fall asleep at the wheel. I mean, that's how relaxed he was. But if you listened, everything that came out of his mouth was like genius city. The comments that he would make that would be so brief would be the only interesting thing about his persona, where when they said to him, you know, how did you do this? How come you were the winner? And he just said, winners are a different breed of cat. And that shuts down the whole discussion. See, he wasn't this big popular guy. They were about the same size. And Scottie and Byron hit the ball equally well. I mean, there couldn't possibly be much to choose between them. And they were both okay putters. Neither one particularly known for their putting. But you don't need to be if you're the best player at the PGA Tour. You just need to putt okay. And So that's who he reminds me of. It's like he's a normal person who hasn't quite become a man of the people, but yet everybody really likes the guy. And I think he finds the moment under pressure and playing in the Masters to be something that, in his words, might be exciting, which to me means his blood pressure doesn't move at all. But he has the perfect disposition to handle it because he's not fussed. He's not thinking. He's not grinding. He's not going through the Jordan Spieth machinations for 72 holes of complete insanity in every single way. Ideally, he has time to look at the birds and watch the wind move the trees and think about his family and think about the baby that's coming. I just think that he plays golf the way that the most happy recreational players do, like the book The Happy Golfer by Bernard Darwin. The happy golfer is the guy who just really enjoys the experience. I played golf with Tom Doak, the great architect at Crystal Downs, one of the great golf courses in the world in Michigan, built by Alistair McKenzie and Perry Maxwell. So we meet at Crystal Downs. Tom Doak, one of the great architects in the world. And he shows up 1 minute before the tee time with the rattiest Sunday bag with so many holes in it. He had 6 clubs in his bag. And he said to me on the first tee, "Can I use your driver and sandwich for today? Because I'm not really sure where mine are." He never hit a shot when it didn't appear he was still walking. He went for walks in the trees. He threw rocks in ponds. He took some photos of birds. He never once discussed golf, never discussed the golf course architectural genius on any level because he never talked about golf. He just had a great old time. That's what Scottie Scheffler's doing. Looks like he's taking a walk away. Come out for a minute, play the shot, go up to the next thing. He doesn't even emote. I mean, you know, if he heard a firecracker, would he budge? So the perfect temperament, and he's not, and unlike Jack, who was super conceited, and Tiger, super conceited, I don't get, and in a healthy way, a healthy arrogance, a healthy athletic, like Muhammad Ali, a healthy athletic arrogance. I don't think Scottie Scheffler even has that in him. Byron Nelson had that. Secretly, he was super arrogant and wanted to really kick the stuffing out of everybody. But that's not the image that he presented in public. He went with the Methodist minister routine. So I just think Scottie Scheffler is a very unusual, totally unique personality. And whatever is wired inside him is super duper simple. And it would take a lot to throw him off course. I think he's going to stick around, John.
Let me ask you about a couple of other players. What did you make of the young man, Ludwig Aubert? What did you make of his performance?
I love this guy to death. I am so turned on by this guy's game. You know, it's funny. I was on one of your colleague shows last Thursday. It always makes me pick the winner that isn't obvious. So I go, okay. So last week I picked Aubert. And it wasn't a particularly scientific expedition for me to get there. I went, well, the guy just turned pro. He's been playing great for a year. He was a stud in the Ryder Cup. He's won on the U.S. Tour last fall. He's won a couple other times on the DP Tour. And he, too, seems to have that same personality, like, you know, like he's looking forward to the ice cream at the turn kind of thing. And he just could not be less stressed about the circumstances. And I had seen him hit the ball before. You know, I had enough information, you know, to satisfy myself that in terms of his striking and his straightness and his swing and the things that I would look for, you know, in somebody who's going to be a great player, if I happen to be right. I just saw all those things in him, and I figured, even though it was his first Masters and his first major, I just didn't think the stakes were anything that were going to bother him, just like Scheffler. You know, and he just made the one, oh, if I'd only played the Masters a couple of more times, I wouldn't have made that mistake. Mm-hmm. It was just an incredible performance. I'm so impressed with him. My son's in a betting pool, so he asked me who I thought this week. And I said, well, if you haven't taken Oberg, I said, it's kind of a short, tight course, which is not normally what you'd think of him for because he's such a long hitter. I said, but he can hit long irons where other guys may be hitting three woods and drivers. And he's on a roll. And he's and he's a kid, and he's like Tiger getting ready to win his first tournament. And so I am so excited about golf's future on the tour because of situations like this. You know, the Tiger's palmiest days are behind him. Now we have Scottie Scheffler. Is it the same thing? No. But are we starting to get the same kind of golf? Yeah. And can Oberg play like that? Yeah. That's why the whole feeder tour thing is so important to the PGA Tour and getting official world golf ranking points, because people need a place to be able to earn their way to play, to get further recognition and play in more important tournaments and make more money. And that's why the PGA Tour is going to survive, is because there's always going to be players like these guys coming along. Rory's at the end of his career, in my view, in terms of the heart of his prime. There's always an Åberg stepping up.
Do you think
Scottie Scheffler?
Do you think Rory ever wins this tournament?
No. I don't know if he's ever going to win another tournament. He's got more issues, and you can just tell them from his press conferences, because he's very long-winded. He's very word salad-y. He changes his mind in a heartbeat. I don't think he has a good sense of context at all. He pulls little strange issues out and tries to magnify them into the macrocosm as opposed to a microcosm issue. I think he has, you know, 7 years with Brad Faxon as his putting coach with no notable victories. Brad Faxon was not that great a player, and yeah, he was a good putter, but hello, 7 years with Brad Faxon, and you're still working on technique. The stroke is 6 or 7 inches, and at Augusta National, it's probably shorter. It's like 2 inches in each direction. It's not rocket scientists. You're trying to figure out what the slope and the speed of the green are going to do to your golf ball as it rolls the hole. You imagine you're rolling it underhanded to get a feel for what the energy should feel like in your right hand, and that's it. There isn't anything else. And all this business with, you know, with access points and shafts and stuff, you can still, you know, and this whole business about all these putters that they're making that are new. There's nothing new in putters. All that stuff, all that Scotty Cameron stuff, all those other, it's all a big scam. There's nothing any different between a putter now than a putter in 1924, the one that Bobby Jones used. There's no difference between a straight piece of steel. I mean, the marketing on that is because, you know, it's like when people buy Tiger's clubs thinking they won't shoot 95 anymore because Tiger plays the same brand.
There was only one player better than 7 under. Do you think the powers that be at Augusta National now have the golf course that they want, or was this somewhat weather induced?
Both. I'd say that they're largely done with making significant changes, which I would say is the 35 yards back tee on 13, and it's also 8 yards up in the air and 5 yards left, so you can't even start a ball down the left side. I think they're largely done with those changes. They are in favor of a rollback of the ball, which God only knows why it has to take another 5 years, because the ball already exists. So you just go back to a ball that went slightly shorter, 10% shorter. Titleist has those molds. It's from 3 years ago. I mean, this business that they're going to have to spend money on it and stuff is completely insane on research. You never heard about research and development of a new golf ball in the history of your life. So, and, you know, that for them to start now, just a bunch of dishonest stuff. But I think that they're satisfied with the golf course. But, yes, the presence of a strong wind, but not so strong that it blew you off when you were trying to hit a putt. It might rock you, but it wasn't enough to shake you. It was a huge contribution to the quality of the way the golf course played. Remember, Jones was a wind guy. The idea was for it to be like St. Andrews. He wanted it to be linksy. You know, one time it was a lot linksier. Not so linksy now, but they still get the win. Jones would have been thrilled with the win and wondered why it hasn't been around much since he passed away. The wind helps that golf course, and it never moves in the same direction, and it swirls through trees, and it doesn't mess with your mind, as they say. It just makes club selection a little bit more difficult, and you have to go ahead and commit. But that's what these guys do for a living, is commit, so that's a given. But yes, the weather and the golf course combined with an incredible champion who beat the third guy by 7 shots was really just one of the really, really great Masters, without being the kind of thing where you jump up off the couch because Tiger chipped in on 16. Doesn't have to be that way, you know. And it wasn't that way when until Nicklaus cut his hair and lost his weight in 1969. Nobody cheered and jumped up. He was a big fatso with green iridescent pants and an old white shirt for the whole 5 days of the 1962 U.S. Open. So it was a wow. It was everything golf needed. It was perfect that the LIV players were unable to perform for precisely the reasons we've talked about, which is you can't not do what you do for a year and then go do it against the best players in the world, unless you're Tiger, Bobby Jones, or Jack Nicklaus. Brooks played bad. John Rahm played bad. They all played bad. They're all done. Nobody missed them. Nobody said, I wish they were on the leaderboard. You make a really bad life decision, you do the wrong thing in a really strong way and stay with it, eventually you're going to drop out of the scene because you're not a decent guy for the circumstances that are at hand, which is, it's golf. Best players should play together. You don't bite the hand that feeds you. I'm delighted that these guys are going to continue to drop off the list of eligibility for major championships, and I think LIV's going to go away.
He is Peter Kessler. I always appreciate the perspective, Peter. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for saying yes, as always.
Oh, are you kidding? I love doing the show with you. You know that.